suppose we had waited for elected officials to desegregate restaurants, lunch counters, public accommodations, buses, and to get the right to vote. I think 50 years later, we would still be waiting. My second point that I'd like to bring up is the issue of protest versus a nonviolent campaign. We've seen, like, the Occupy movement a few years ago, and now the Hands Up movement. And I believe that young people are on the right track. They are taking matters into their own hands. But one thing that I have observed is that I think sometimes we do not know how to differentiate between protest and a movement. In protests, it's just what the word says. I protest this. I do not like this. Very often the powers that be know that we don't like what's going on, but they're determined to do it anyway. On the other hand, a nonviolent movement or a nonviolent campaign starts where you are right now, causes you to set a very clear, concrete objective. And I like to say also that it should be a written objective. Nobody can give you what you want unless you know what that is.
That's right.
That was civil rights leader and SNCC co-founder Diane Nash speaking in Selma on March 7th, 50 years after the first Selma march that led to the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Part two of our special broadcast from Selma tomorrow. Democracy Now! Is produced in Selma by Mike Burke, Connie Massoud, and Dennis Moynihan. In New York, Renee Feltz, Robbie Karen, Aaron Mate, Nermin Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield. Tomorrow, part two of our special broadcast from Selma and Montgomery, Alabama. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:02. Coming up next is more talk radio with hosts Celeste Carey and Cecil Prescott. In recognition of International Women's Day, which was yesterday, we'll invite women callers only to call in and talk about women's issues.
Looks like these kids are going to have some fun, doesn't it?
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of PDX Cocoon and their first public storytelling event on Thursday, March 12th at 5 p.m. at Lola's Room in Portland. The theme of this first storytelling event is Risk. PDX Cocoon is a student-led group that is working to facilitate storytelling for Portland youth through workshops and events. Again, that's Episode 1, Risk, by PDX Cocoon on Thursday, March 12th, 5 p.m. at Lola's Room, below the Crystal Ballroom at 1332 West Burnside in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
I'd sure hate to be left out.
I down all in the ground, I'd root that mountain down, and I wish I was a mole in the ground.
Tune in to KBOO Monday mornings at 9 for the Old Mole Variety Hour, your source for radically democratic news, views, reviews, and interviews, stories of ordinary and extraordinary people working to root down the oppressive institutions of capitalism. That's the Old Mole Variety Hour, Monday mornings at 9.
KBOO Community Radio is looking for qualified candidates to fill two vacant board seats. The KBOO Board of Directors invites qualified KBOO members who are interested in becoming a board member to submit a candidate statement no longer than 500 words, which should include the applicant's experience, information about previous board or coalition experience, and why they want to serve on the KBOO Board of Directors. Please email your candidate statement to Timothy Welp at kboocommunity@gmail.com by March 13th, 2015. Candidates should also plan on being present at the March 23rd, 6 p.m. KBOO Board of Directors meeting to present a short statement about why they are interested in joining KBOO Board of Directors. Again, KABU is looking for qualified candidates to serve on the board of directors. Application due March 13th and public presentations will be made March 23rd. More information can be found at kabu.fm/boardvacancies2015.
Looks like these kids are gonna have.
Today is Monday, March 9th, 2015. You're listening to KBOO Community Radio. This is More Talk Radio. If you're listening, you're listening on the air in Corvallis at 104.3, in Hood River, 91.9, and in Portland, 90.7. Via the World Wide Web, it is KBOO.FM. This is More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott, and I will be joined shortly with my partner, Celeste Carey. Today, in honor of International Women's Day, we want to focus on women and women's voices. Let me give you our numbers. Our numbers are 503-231-8187, or you may email us at moretalkradio@gmail.com. Again, our numbers are 503-231-8187, and our email address is moretalkradio@gmail.com. Good morning, Celeste.
Good morning, Cecil. How are you doing?
I'm well.
All right. And I want to give big ups to our engineer, Steve. Big ups. So, yesterday was a thorn in my side. Yeah. It was International Women's Day. And I don't know if there's any other women out there like myself who feel a little bit born to strife behind all of this International Women's Day thing, because I remember my mom dealing with stuff 24/7, 365. I don't get how we just gets a day, internationally. I mean, it seems to me there's enough women around the world to justify a whole year. You know, we can split it, you know, 12 hours, you know. Or actually, I think it would be more equitable if we split it something like, 11 hours and 55 minutes, 12 hours and 5 minutes. Because I think women really hold up more than half the sky. But today, I would really encourage women to call in and discuss 3 points that I came up with. And I'm not going to pretend like these are the most cogent, illuminating points ever that women could discuss. But I think that they are significant when we look at where we are, given that this is a brand new century, and that we are celebrating and marking really important dates on a regular basis, a daily basis. We're talking about remembering Selma, for example. And recognizing the fact that there have been some steps forward. And yes, there's also been steps backwards, but there's been some steps forward. So here's the thing that I would really like to talk about with my sisters, my mothers, my aunts, you know, daughters, everybody. But women only, please. Number one, especially if you're an older woman, and by older I mean around maybe your 50s, what has occurred that you think was a major step forward? What has occurred that you feel that women were due and it's about time and we're doing right? Women who are younger than 50, what still needs to be done? What is missing? What have we yet to understand as a culture? Or if neither one of those, you know, tickles your fancy, what one thing would you like men to get, to understand, to recognize, to work on, to change, to improve? And I know those may seem, like I said, not the most illuminating, but in light of where we are, and in light of some of the generational differences, I think might be important. I think that there would be some interesting answers coming out of that, because we would be able to get, I think, a bigger view, a broader view of where we stand. And with regards to what one thing would you like men to get, I'll recount something I heard on another radio station. Now, these two issues were not in the same commentary, but I heard them within the same hour, and I thought that there was such a tremendous gulf in understanding that needed to occur that first, I was kind of upset that these were even issues, that we should be so far past this by now. But then I thought, okay, well, that is the human condition. Sometimes it's one step forward and 20 years back. So the issues were women discussing the movie that had been produced, which addresses rape in India. And that was not necessarily an issue that was specific to India, but just the fact that because of the publicity over some of the really sad issues with rape and the students having lost their lives, that the movie was really stirring up a lot of sentiment. And for some men, they thought that this was something that women had brought upon themselves. And that was one of the things that really just kind of horrified me and upset me. Another thing that was mentioned on this station was the fact that there were some men who were trying to have a greater sense of empathy and sympathy for women going through pregnancy, and they were wearing pregnancy suits. And I kind of chuckled at that, and I'm thinking, well, okay, I can appreciate the attempt to bridge that gap. And that is a wide gulf, and they're not likely to ever experience it. But the fact that they cared enough to at least try, albeit it was kind of a, I think, partially a publicity stunt, it said something about a desire to communicate better, to understand, to seek to connect in a more stronger fashion. So, okay, you've got those two big extremes of male and female experiences and communication dynamics. Somewhere, somehow, there's got to be some points coming out that are strong and valid and hopefully would make a big difference. And I thought, okay, those are the kinds of things maybe women want men to understand a little bit about, how a sense of privilege pervades even both of those, and how even trying to understand how important these issues are for women is still couched in terms of I don't know, still calling somebody other. Does that make sense to you, Cecil? I mean, given that I am asking women only to you're my co-host, I seek at least acknowledgement that I've been heard by a man while he might still be grappling with what I actually meant.
Yes, you have been heard.
Okay. Are you grappling with what I meant?
I grapple to understand what you mean.
Okay,
as
well.
As much as I can.
Okay. Do you have a question maybe I can answer? And by the way, I know there are women listening. 503-231-8187. This is our day. This is our moment. Let's talk about some stuff.
And what were those three queries that you suggested?
Three points. And you know, even though it's a little arbitrary, you don't have to worry about doing them by age. You can pick whichever one you want. But I'm especially interested in hearing if people want to do it that way. Women over 50, what have we made progress in? What have we got right? What did we do okay? Women who are under 50, what still needs to be done? What things have we missed totally? Or what one thing would you like men to understand and to get and to be able to connect on in a deeper fashion in terms of understanding? There. Now, it's not rocket science when we say we want not just to be listened to, but to be heard and connected with. And I think sometimes people really make it a little bit harder than it seems to be. I mean, than it needs to be. And how do we make it harder? Sometimes by refusing to get out of our own perspective. You know, if you're stuck in your head, and you're looking at things from your perspective, you can't always see the sense that people are making, you know? Pure and simple. I mean, I appreciate you nodding your head. You can say something.
Yes.
But I've had a couple of experiences this past week which really have pointed not only the gulf that I experienced in terms of age and in terms of ethnicity, but gender. And you just, you know, you want to make sure that you can have a open conversation. And I think one way to do it might be looking at how ethnicity and gender intersect. Okay, lines are flashing. So, good morning, Anne.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. It was a weird week. And so, you know, I was a little upset because once again, we've got International Women's Day, not even month or week.
I agree. Yeah.
but tell me, what's on your mind? What do you think of any of the topics that we have?
Okay. So I'm 51. And one of the things that I think has happened that was good for women and for everybody, frankly, was reproductive rights, which, of course, we have to fight for constantly. But it enabled access to education, opportunity, and other things. So it had a ripple effect. So that's the first, that's the good thing that happened. The thing that has yet to happen is equal pay.
Isn't that mind-boggling?
Yeah, I mean, it's 2015. So,
I remember. And one of the, go ahead.
No, I've never been on the radio before. One of the first things that Obama signed was the Lilly Ledbetter Act, and I don't see that it's had any impact on equity of pay for women. So I really don't know how we're going to fix that. Okay, I'm done.
I remember being on a panel of journalists about 10 years or so ago, and I was speaking with a young woman from Angola who was blown away by the whole issue of unequal pay in the United States. She could not understand that. And what got me was not only was this a young woman from Angola, and for folks, just in case that's not familiar, that's a country in Africa. Not only was this a young woman, but she was also a journalist, and she took the whole idea of equal pay for granted. She said, as a rule, that was not the issue that she had experienced her meager lifetime in her country. Now, I'm thinking, if a young woman is saying this, and, you know, this was some 10 years ago, what's wrong with us here in the United States? Why is it we still don't value all of what a woman brings to the table?
I honestly don't know. It seems like a no-brainer to me. But somehow it hasn't happened yet. And I'm 51, and I don't know if it's ever going to happen. So that's not good. And then do you want to know my third thing?
Sure.
Okay, so I would want men to know that they have privilege, and that when women are telling them about it and asking them to check it, that they believe us. Because as a white person, I don't always see my privilege, but I have learned to believe people of color when they tell me that I do, because they are telling the truth 99.99% of the time. And I don't even speak up sometimes to men because I know that they won't believe me. So that's what I would say about that.
You know, the only way I could think of to prove to men that we don't have the same privilege that they do is to let them sort out a problem where we are experiencing that problem of no privilege. Let them handle the problem. You know, I almost want to say, oh, hold on just a minute. Let me get the man in my life. And that's not a derogation, guys. Okay, so don't get your feathers up. You know, but it's like, and let him experience what it's like to solve this problem. Like when I want to get a flat changed and it costs $10, $15, $20, $30 more. You know, because I'm not a man, and the men, you know, who ought to be looking out for me because I'm somebody's mother. Wouldn't it be nice to leave that money in my purse so I can take care of my family?
Mm-hmm.
But they want to charge you more. So thank you, Ann.
thank you very much.
Well, let's celebrate the things that we know were done right, and let's celebrate the men who are also working with us to get those things right. You are listening to More Talk Radio. Women, this is our day. 503-231-8187. Good morning, Shannon.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Of course, I want to start with the positive. I'm almost 45 years old, and I was raised by a single working mother. And what I have seen that has been a breakthrough is that a lot of women are being more readily accepted into historically male roles, such as being pilots, engineers, computer programmers. There's still ways to go, but they are able to break through into those fields more often. What I think needs to be improved and what's holding us back is actually somewhat self-sabotage. I've worked in the business world and hospitality as well. When I work in hospitality, the women get along much better. They're expected to be outgoing and attractive and smart, and, you know, they're expected to be these things. When you're in the business world, if you're all those things, when women get competitive, they get personal. When men get competitive, it's the issue at hand. This is the job. It's done. We're competing at that. But women really still have a problem differentiating ourselves. I was actually told recently by my boss that the women that I was working with didn't like my emails. They felt they were too abrupt. I needed to flower them up more and start off with, how's your day? Are you having a good weekend? And, oh, is this weather beautiful? And in that way, we are holding ourselves back and expecting that.
Well, let me ask you, is your boss male or female?
My boss is male.
Mm-hmm.
And the women that I work with in this particular group are females.
So
I'm a contractor,
mm-hmm.
and I've worked primarily with engineers, and this is not an engineering group.
Okay. One of the things that I've noticed about certain fields where men work, and I used to be a nurse, and I remember when I was going to school and we had a couple of men in the class, is that you will find that women do tend to be more personal and personable in their communication. And so when I hear a man say, your emails are upsetting other women because they're too abrupt, you know, the first thing I want to do is ask the women, is that really it? Is it that we are taught that we're supposed to act a certain way? And so there is there's some uncertainty about how we address each other. I like being a little bit more personal, just so that the people I'm working with know that I'm real, you know, that I'm compassionate, that I have some care. And I try to balance between task-oriented and people-oriented. And so I'm curious as to how much that is really true and how much it is the women feeling that you've forgotten that we do have the compassionate touch, or is it even true at all? And that's just a perception maybe of your boss because of gender.
I've seen it in other jobs throughout the years. I mean, I've been working since I was 15 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen it. There's that disparity of going in. Now, I look pretty young for my age, so it's more difficult too when you're younger. I mean, if I'm 45 and I look like I'm 30, imagine when I was 25 and trying to go in and establish some sort of authority. It was very difficult. And then being a woman as well, and back then that was in, you know, the 80s, early 90s.
Right.
And so now I see actually progress with men taking your authority better if you establish yourself without unapologetically. I've seen more resistance from women where if you come in and just say, okay, well, this is, you know, not being personable, but keeping it at a professional level as you see men in leadership roles do. I have seen resistance and even, you know, some, what's the word I'm trying to think of? Just the women not being real happy with your presence being there until you flower up, I guess is the best term I can think of.
Well, the only other thing that I might suggest, and again, this is a weight, a gender thing, and maybe I should have said this sooner, is women do have a different way of leading. And women have what some men might want to call the flowery touch. That's who we are. We're intuitive. We show compassion and nurturing. And if the men like it better when you do it their way, that's kind of stripping you of your femininity. You know, to be a leader doesn't mean you have to do it like the men do it. That is not the only paradigm. And so
I agree.
Yeah. And so I think there's a balance that can be met, but I'm a little suspect. I mean, I was also a cadet officer in the Air Force. So I, you know, one of the things that I learned is, yeah, I'll bark an order, but I also know that there's a certain tone that I can put in my voice as a woman that says, I'm still a woman, but I mean business.
I agree.
Yeah.
And that takes me to what I'd like men to know.
Well, really quickly, because we got a full buffer, really quickly.
Yeah, just really quickly, equality does not mean uniformity.
All right. I like
that. Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll go to our next caller. Good morning, Leslie.
Oh, hi. Good morning. I wanted to go to the one thing I wanted to men know, and I wanted to say that a lot of female response is motivated by survival as opposed to ego. For example, sexual harassment on the job, while it might seem like a harmless little joke, to get into a confrontation with a coworker threatens your job, which threatens your rent, which threatens your survival.
Yes.
So these are not, you know, an unplanned pregnancy that you cannot afford threatens your survival. I mean, these are life and death issues. These aren't issues of convenience or, you know, how I feel today. And also, and I also think the issue of the difference of pay in the United States, a lot of this is motivated, I think, by sexual control, a desire for sexual control, a desire to control someone, a desire to control access to sex. If someone is economically crippled by having more children than they can support, they're economically vulnerable, which also can make them sexually vulnerable, which can make them vulnerable to be preyed upon. Cutting off people's access, the resentment of and the war against food stamps. If you're getting some type of supplementary income, you don't have to be trawling for, you know, a relationship you don't want in order to survive. Whereas if you've got limited income, you might succumb to a relationship just to put food on your table, just to put food in your kid's mouth. So I think a lot of this is about sexual control.
I'm just thinking here because I'm thinking about some of the experiences myself and my friends have had. Do you think it's only about sexual control? Do you think at some point it's just control by itself, or does it always have that sexual element in it?
I mean, from what I see about everything from the hysteria about over birth control, over abortion, I mean, I don't get how the same person who resents paying child support also resents a woman's right to abortion. I mean, which do you want? You can't have it both ways.
Well, I do hear that. And what bothers me is that nowhere in the issue is there any concern for, you know, a child who is vulnerable. Instead, it sometimes just manifests itself in control of the woman.
Exactly. Well, I don't know. I've observed that a lot, but just wanted to put that out there. Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you very much for your call. Bye-bye. You are listening to More Talk Radio here this wonderful Monday morning. We are celebrating International Women's Month. I am adamant. I don't care that it says day and that was yesterday. Like I said, a month, huh? I have to advocate for just a month instead of more. But the point being is that we do hold up at least half of the sky, and we are the bearers of civilization, if nothing else. And that's not to denigrate my brothers, my fathers, my uncles, yada, yada. It's just to say, you know, recognition is due. And you can share your points, women calling in only today, 503-231-8187 here on More Talk Radio with Cecil and myself, Celeste. Cecil is listening. He's got the wise air today. But let me interject here. I've got one that came in by email. Kate, who says, I'm nearly 60, and the one thing she can think about was, she wants to offer, rather, is that she was able at the age of 24 to get her tubes tied without permission of her husband. Now, her doctor, who was more progressive than her friends and other family's doctor, had five kids and still had to have her husband's permission. Now, we're talking about a professional woman in the medical field, no less. And that was around 1980, she said. Now, I'm wondering what part of the country that was, because regionally, I can see that there had been some, what would we call it, some restrictive thinking. But just the fact that you would have to ask your husband's permission to do that for your body and hopefully for yourself. And I understand that, you know, sometimes men want to have more family. Okay, yeah. But I don't remember anywhere where it said that a man had to have his wife's permission to get a vasectomy. I don't recall that when I went to nursing school many years ago. Let's go to our callers who are coming in online. Good morning, Francis.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm 66 years old, and I recognize I've never felt the rivalry with men. I don't understand the rivalry. To me, it's an imposed rivalry by our society. When I was in 1970, I married my husband, and 2 months later, he was taken away, and he had been in prison for many years now, almost 40. And I was pregnant with our son at the time. Mm-hmm. I have been a single parent for a long time. And to me, I do believe that the Civil Rights Act that was celebrated, the march was celebrated yesterday, but the Civil Rights Act is the most for women and all oppressed people.
Mm-hmm.
I think one thing that we haven't gotten right yet is to recognize that women, I myself as a mother and a wife and a daughter and a sister, one of my primary concerns is what happens to the men that I love.
Yeah.
And I don't like this rivalry. I don't like it being imposed upon us. I understand that our society has expectations on all of us, men and women. And I don't like that domestic violence is now only associated with men and young men. And the marriages that we can have now, who is going to be the violent? I'm sure that in gay marriages, there will be violence. Is it going to be the man, or is it going to be the woman, or who? I mean, it's not. I don't like this rivalry. And what I would like men to know is that it's okay to share your feelings and to know that people will take care of them and they won't hurt them when they do. So that rather than always fighting to protect yourself, you can share your feelings and we can sit down and talk and stop fighting over everything.
Mm.
Thank you.
Thank you, Francis.
You guys like, hi, Cecil. Yeah, I know you're there too.
Hey, Francis.
Thank
nice.
You so much.
Bye-bye.
There's a song I played this Saturday past on my music program, An Evening of Afrotainment, and it was by a 60s singer who I guess you could call Camille Yarbrough kind of a folk singer in a sense. Black woman, very strong poetry and singing, and it the song was It Always Comes Out Hard. It always comes out mean. And she was talking about the communication dynamic between her and her man, especially with regard to the fact that society makes it hard for him to get a job, for him to be able to express himself as a human being and as a man without being criminalized, and all of the same things we talk about even now. So nothing has changed. But it talked also about the importance of both of them never giving up trying to break that paradigm and find a way to communicate feelings and love and respect and support for feelings and love to each other, despite the fact that the culture we live in doesn't like it. And, you know, that's not something that's only found in homes of color. It's everywhere. And also, Francis, you're right, you know, with regard to, domestic violence, gay, straight couples are going to experience it. And sometimes it's just not having a larger system of support, and sometimes is never having had or using good communication skills and recognizing this is the person that you want in your life, so therefore this person gets your best. You know, this person is not your punching bag. This person is the one you sit down and you're vulnerable to, so they can help you get past that moment. And that's a lesson we can all use. It doesn't matter whether we're in an intimate relationship or not. It's value to people who are in your life, because you can have your things, as Diana Ross says. You can bring them to bed with you. You're still pretty lonely. That's the end. All right, go to our next caller. Good morning, Sunny.
Good morning. These are all nice calls. It's nice of you to do this show, and I'll be really fast. I got in trouble with some of the politically correct people years back. I'm an American Indian, and I even noticed, I felt that the presentation of Christianity in the public schools was really heavily negative and slanted and narrow against Christianity. I don't want to see anything against Christianity or Islam or anybody's spiritual path or non-spiritual path. I just, you know. And so also I also got into trouble a little bit when I was volunteering on domestic violence by saying that women can and do perpetrate violence in relationships and against men. I have seen it. It happens, and that's coming forward. I think we're making progress.
I have to agree with you there, and it's only just now that we're accepting that women do.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad to see that we're making progress, and I would like men to know that we do appreciate their whole selves. We find a lot of beauty in their totality, but I think as far as the media, women are worse off in their representation than they've ever been. When you drive into Tigard, you see giant billboards of these beautiful Barbie doll-looking women, Barbie doll-faced women that you can possibly go by at the adult men's club. We see all sorts of things going on that we women walk around all the time when we say things. A lot of women do qualify it, trying to say, we're not saying this against you, or we're not trying to pick a fight. But men need to speak up on our behalf and ask, what the heck is going on? You know, what's going on? Why are we doing this? What's this representation of women? What is it? And then the last thing, you see how the dice is really loaded, and I agree very much with that woman who called about it being a sexual thing, a sexual thing, a sexual thing, because when you end up a low-income single mother raising children by yourself, you don't find help often, most often. You don't have help offered. You have predation, further predation upon your vulnerability.
That's
offered.
True. Yeah.
And the men who don't walk that walk, you know, they're beautiful and they're stronger than the rest of them who do it. All of them combined, that good-hearted man who stands with women, who will help women, and help women also help men. They're beautiful and they need to come to us and help us more. That's all I have to say.
Well, I like your emphasis on the partnership. And
yeah.
Also, men, it sounds like, if I'm hearing you right, men speaking to men about controlling, being such sexual predators. And I also want to touch on what you said about it's not just men who are being violent. There is a little online program called Upworthy, and sometimes I watch the videos, and there was a little test done in public with this young couple. When he is hitting her, all these men run to intervene. But when she's hitting and wailing on him, nobody intervenes, as though it's okay. And we have such a skewed message about violence. It's like no violence against either one is right, but we'll accept certain levels. And what good is it for a woman to get away with beating up a man if we don't want that violence, period, in a relationship? How is that helping us?
That's right. That's a good point. And I would have intervened, and I think somebody else would step aside in there and say, you don't, no, don't do that. That's a that's respect that person. You don't do that. You need to learn, and they do, because it's not good for them either in the long run. It destroys everything in their lives. It destroys the abuser too, even further. But no, I agree with you, and we've got to get it together, you know. And a wholehearted man is a beautiful thing, but men also need to start talking about the media's representation of women, because let's admit, a lot of the media is just programming. It's indoctrination into violence against women, movie after movie, with nothing but the idea of, here's a new female victim. And I won't go on about it, but I do appreciate your show, and I always appreciate Cecil's presence and his thoughtful questions and his comments on things likewise. So,
well, thank you so much for calling and being part of the family.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. One of the things that's really fearful, and I look to everybody, every human being, you know, within the sound of my voice, to ripple this outward, is to break down this conflation, this intersection of gender and violence. I had a conversation with somebody who's supposed to be an enlightened friend of mine, and when he says, "Oh yeah, well, sex and violence is sexy," and I said, "No, it isn't," and I couldn't believe we ended up with a 45-minute conversation about that. And he was not being tongue in cheek like I hoped he was being. He was quite serious, and it bothers me that we allow this kind of really base titillation, because it desensitizes us to all areas of human compassion. So no, just no, please no. What we got?
Some announcements.
Oh, okay. What's coming up?
Well, let me remind people that today at 5:30 there is a rally to push back the fast track legislation. Will take place in Directors Park, 815 Southwest Park in downtown Portland. Again, that's a rally opposing the free trade deal and urging representatives and senators to oppose it. 5:30 p.m. In Directors Park downtown. And coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 is the OMO Variety Hour, part 2 of a conversation with Al Weinrub on how cities can lead in cutting carbon emissions. A mini documentary on Stud Terkel, looking at the influence on the Wobblies and other working class intellectuals. And Jan Hawkins speaks with film director Karen Wetzer about Sisterhood of Night, a feminist-inspired mystery drama. At 10:15 is Air Cascadia News Headlines with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Locus Focus host Barbara Bernstein speak with Eric DePlace of the Sightline Institute about the Koch brothers' design on the Northwest and what communities must do to stop them. At 11 on Health Watch, Dr. David Naiman speaks with journalist Catherine Price about her book Vitamania, Our Obsessive Quest for Nutritional Perfection. 11:30 on Health and Healthcare Forum, Roberta Halls hosts a conversation with Richard Otterbury, who founded the Ocean Blue Project, an effort to clean up streams and thus oceans. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you're not a KBOO member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate Today. And right now, you're listening to More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott.
I am Celeste Carey, and we're welcoming women to call in. It's 8:47. We got a little time left, but don't wait till the last moment, because what you have to say is important. Share it with us. 503-231-8187. And we're going to Linda. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for the show.
Well, thank you for calling.
You know, one thing that I was thinking just now with progress for women was the medical field. It hasn't gone all the way, but it used to be that all of the major studies about how we react to medications and how we react psychologically were all based on males. They literally did them all on males.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for example, the fight and flight reaction changed substantially when they did the same tests on women. But generally what I wanted to say is medically, there's a lot more care to the differences between men and women, and women are getting care that is much better tailored to them. So we know about women's heart disease and that it's different. So we know about, you know, just many things. And that was part of the women's movement. That was something women fought for. What made me get to there first, though, was that reproductive history. I was able to get birth control in 1968 in Eugene. There was one doctor that everybody knew who could, who would prescribe you birth control. It had become legal, I believe, before that, for a doctor to prescribe to, for a woman without her husband's okay, which had been an issue. So I'm surprised. But doctors can be tyranny, and if they're the only yes. doctor who can prescribe to you, and he can say that, well, I want to talk to your husband first, and you weren't going to have much protection. Well, our right for reproductive care, including the right for abortion, really has made a substantial difference, and it is very much under attack and being taken backwards. So talk about single women having access to birth control saves a single woman from having to marry to be intimate or have a child. And so I think, you know, that also made a huge difference. And then the way that it made a difference that we don't see very often or we don't talk about very often is men were freed up for their softer side. Look at how many men parent their children. Men in the birthing room. Mm-hmm. When I was coming up as a teenager, men did not go in the birthing room. Men stood outside smoking cigarettes. It was too much for men or too something for
men.
Well,
they've been programmed to think that it was too much.
Right, exactly, exactly. And now, I mean, I feel like it's a cultural shift. That's been a huge shift in the intimacy men get to experience with their children and what that means for a whole family. So that's, to me, those are very real progress that we've made as women. And other people have talked about others in some of the fields. But we clearly haven't won the game. And, oh, and the other thing was women's ability to express themselves visually, like gay women being able to dress more, quote, butch if they want to. And not, and you know, not just being an acceptable part of our expression.
And
which it was not. It was very much not when I was younger. And so, I mean, I think there has been real progress, but obviously we're under attack in the most important one, which is reproductive care. And we haven't made the gains in equality for, I think we've made gains in education, but not in job and pay.
Right, so, right.
And, of course, not in violence. And
well,
and
you
so
know.
Those are what I wanted to throw in for.
One of the things I want to pull out of what you said was the whole idea of men being able to nurture their children. One of the things that's really important about that is not only does that bring up a child more fully grounded and give them a certain level of security that makes them feel validated, but it helps a man to live longer. And so by having that tighter and more loving family unit, man benefits and the family benefits.
Yeah,
it really helps. And it's men who do that who I hope will step out and speak up against domestic violence of any type, but also the whole visual impact of the media's pandering pandering with sexual images of women and the conflation of gender and violence. I'm hoping they'll speak out because, after all, they've got children they love, and some of those children are females. And are those girls supposed to grow up and be somebody else's tabloid fantasy? I hope not.
Well, and you know, that whole issue is so very complicated because part of the women's liberation movement is the liberation of our sexuality, our ability
right.
to walk around looking sexual, our ability to say, have a sexual expression, which is not an invitation to violence. And to be, you know, and to be able to try out and experiment with our sexuality and all of that kind of stuff. And we don't want to change the conversation to where we have to shut that down to protect us from violence. You know, it's a difficult conversation because I know some feminists, you know, they kind of almost don't believe, you know, if you have a more out there sexual expression than they think is good, they say it's you've been twisted by oppression. Well, we're more complex than that, you know. So that's a big conversation going forward, is how do we deal with this? And I don't think we're anywhere close to figuring that one out, but no doubt it'll be down the road. I think probably the biggest danger
really quickly
is capitalism. I just want to say it is capitalism.
Okay.
I also want to let people know that Chinese saying you used, what, women hold up half the sky?
Oh, yes.
It was Mao Zedong who popularized that. Women got the right to divorce as soon as the revolution was made. And that was the title of one of his most famous talks.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for bringing that to our attention.
Yes,
good to know.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And we'll go to our next caller. Good morning, Marion.
Oh, good morning, Celeste and Cecil. And on the heels of Mao Zedong, let me add that Muhammad said, paradise is at the feet of your mother.
Oh, I love that.
On my cork board in front of me, and I seem to have to remind my three sons of this on a very regular basis. On one hand, it is funny, but on the other hand, Celeste, I am a 55-year-old woman that was severely, violently beaten at the age of 16 and 17 by my first love, and I thought that was so much far behind me, and I have since been violently hurt by my own children.
Oh my. And because, do you have some support now, or are you still in a vulnerable position?
It's been a heck of an experience, because I'm a somewhat privileged white person of whiteness, but I'm a woman, and that only goes so far, and then it really comes up against the same brick wall that every other woman does. And you know, ultimately I didn't really get much help at all. And for all the screams, and for all the actual calling out for help, I never got one person that ever called 911.
That bothers
never.
Me, because I addressed this at our last show, is that, you know, people don't have to get involved physically, but they should call when they hear something. It's not that person's business. It's all of our business.
It is such an incredibly convoluted, complex situation that we cannot ever stop talking about. So I can imagine my hair on the back of my neck prickled when people were saying that it's okay somehow that people will come to your rescue if it's a man beating a woman, but if it's not. I've never had anybody come to my rescue.
I'm sorry
ever.
To hear that.
And so I just want to touch on that. What I would like men to know is that patriarchy sucks, and that I believe that capitalism and patriarchy are in this country, in this culture, are hand in hand, and that therein lies, I think, the core of everything, because other cultures don't have all the things that we're dealing with. Even the pay scale that you were reflecting on in Angola they don't deal with that. We are.
Yes.
And, you know, until we value the women, we won't be valuing the children. And we have the worst family-centered culture that I'm aware of in the whole world. So I continue not to be valued. My children don't value me, much like their father didn't value me. And
now, do you have any support? I mean, if you would like, I can have you call back later offline. But there are some places that you can go to start to get some assistance if that's a challenge, that has
come a long way.
Okay.
And I ultimately ended up having to call the police myself on my own son. And, you know, and
that's a hard choice, but yeah,
I'm
glad you
made
it.
That was my last point, is that my son, that particular son, but all of my three sons and my daughter too, for that matter, have all had a lot of the same floundering in their teen youth coming into adulthood, because along with our patriarchy and our extreme capitalism, we have no initiation rights for our children, for our youth. We don't have a wonderfully warm, huge community way of welcoming our youth into adulthood. And so our men are feeling so that we love those sons that you were just referring to, how much we love our sons, our fathers and our brothers and our uncles. Well, I don't love my brothers, but anyway, I mean my specific sibling brothers, but my other brothers I do love. I do have some brothers I love for sure, and I do have men that I love, and there are men that are so wonderful. So I'm by no means a man basher, but I'm very much very tired of being at the bottom of the heap under the man's foot.
Well, you know, one thing I want to suggest is that you check out Elders in Action just as a beginning set of for some assistance, and that phone number is 503-235-5474. That's 503-235-5474. And as we close the show, I want to encourage people to reach out and connect with each other across lines of gender, economy, education, race, everything, so that we can become better connected and we can become each other's keeper and sharer of life. This is your Community Connection, KBOO Portland.
Every Monday night at 8 o'clock, you can hear this voice alerting you that
you are about to cross the border.
And then follow the footsteps to a two-hour-long sustained environment of uninterrupted sonic art or new electronic, experimental, or postmodern music. Audio that breaks and rewrites the rules to create entirely new worlds of sound. Where will you be on Mondays at 8 when the door slams shut? Here on KBOO Portland.